This is case 27 from the Mumon Khan. Gittel's Gate. Not mind, not Buddha. The case. Monk asks Nan Sen, in all earnestness, is there any dharma that has not been preached to the people? Nan Sen said, there is. The monk said, what is the dharma which has never been preached to the people? Nan Sen said, it is neither mind, nor Buddha, not a being. Mumon's commentary. Nan Sen was merely asked a question, and he exhausted all his possessions at once and was reduced to nothing. The verse. Too much talk degrades virtue. Silence is certainly effective. Even if the great ocean should change, it can never be communicated to you. So today, I would like to go back to basics and explore the initial impulse that motivates us to engage with spiritual practice. For all of us, for those of us who are just trying it out, coming here for the first time, inquiring about the Dharma, and for the rest of us who are eternal beginners. What is it that drives us to inquire about the practice tradition? And what is it that sustains the commitment as the practice becomes integrated part of our lives? As human beings, we appear in many different and unique colors and shapes. Yet we also share fundamental similarities that cut through time, space, appearances, and cultural differences. One of those similarities is the essence of curiosity, the timeless desire to inquire and understand ourselves and the world in which we function. This is a natural trait that has led human race to great discoveries and advancements, but it has also been a catalyst for much suffering and great harm. Our inquisitiveness and curiosity are, of course, natural aspects of our expression as human beings. So there's no need to stifle it. The question is, how do we express it? Do we explore as a way of expressing our intrinsic nature? Or do we explore for the sake of defining it? Can the curiosity be an infinite expression of who we are and a catalyst for our creativity? Or are we motivated by an inner sense of lack, invested in the hope of finding the missing piece that will finally put the discontentment to rest? Or that we will finally find ourselves, arrive somewhere else. All spiritual practices are born out of a desire, our desire for deep inquiry about our intrinsic being and the nature of reality. So we cannot disregard or eliminate the desire to know. Of course, we want to know. So how do we cultivate a practice of deep inquiry and infinite exploration while freeing ourselves from the idea of finding or concluding? How do we practice enlightenment rather than make it a prized possession or a future goal? In the Genjo Koan, Dogen speaks about two ways of practice, one that maintains delusion and the other that supports wisdom and realization. He said, conveying oneself toward all things to carry out practice enlightenment is delusion. all things coming and carrying out practice enlightenment through the self is realization. In the commentary to on the Genja Koan, Okumura writes that the desire to become enlightened and free ourselves from suffering is only creating more suffering and gets us further entangled. But does that mean that any wanting by itself is wrong and should be avoided? Should we not want to awaken? Isn't that what brought you to the Dharma and ignited your practice? Knowing how to inquire and how to sustain the desire to awaken is very important, since we encounter all kinds of challenges on the path, and we need to know how to stay resolute when we lose the momentum and feel discouraged. We also need to know how to deepen. So obviously that's very important. The issues with spiritual exploration arise when we create a gap between where we are and where we want to be. When we expect that the practice will later provide a missing ingredient we currently lack. In essence, the practice can only purify that which has never been desecrated. Unite that which has never been separated and make you the Buddha that you already are. So what kind of wanting is needed to work on arriving at the place you are sitting? This seems to create a kind of logical paradox, but we shouldn't let that bother us. We should be okay with the mind saying, "It makes no sense." It's very important to get to that point and see the mind, hear the mind saying, "This makes no sense to me." And then say, "Okay, yeah, it doesn't have to." Because as long as we don't break through that barrier, there's always going to be that sense of, "Yes, but there is something that I need and I will get, and I don't have it now." The sense of duality exists or begins in the mind through one thought. One thought creates the gap, creates the separation. So as long as we feed that mechanism or sustain that mechanism, there is no finding. There is only searching. There is no arriving anywhere. And it's a very frantic kind of search, because we're running out of time, right? There's that too. Wanting, by definition, implies lack. Whether we want a commodity, comfort, status, education, or knowledge, essentially, we only want what we think we do not have. So how can you want what you already are? Looking at that, it collapses the entire notion of wanting. And yet, when it comes to the practice of practicing the Dharma, you are here by choice. You need to want to go to a Zazen Kai, a Sesshin. You need to have some kind of inner impulse or drive, or it won't happen. You won't show up. When there is a sense of gain, and when we expect the efforts to provide what we are lacking, then it is conveying oneself toward all things to carry out practice enlightenment. And that is what Dogen says, delusion. So we want to show up at the practice center. Something in us is moving us to that, right? Can we look at that which is moving us and leave it at that and allow that to do the exploration rather than allow that to ignite the mind that says, I need something that I don't have. And based on what I read, this should give it to me. I have to pay the dues, do what I need to do, and I'll get it. So conveying oneself to world, all things to carry out practice enlightenment is delusion. It is delusion because the self is still active as an outside and separate observer. The self is acting upon reality. But in essence, reality already includes the self. So any idea of separateness is by nature, obviously, illusory. Or created. It is not possible to be outside of the totality of all things. Or the saying, mounting a donkey to go look for a donkey, is similar to what Dogen is pointing at. And it's what happens when we practice with result-oriented mindset. We act upon reality, trying to change it to feed ourselves. When we recognize and trust that a sense of lack is just an illusion, we practice without an expectation to arrive anywhere else or become someone else other than what we already are. If we practice this way, we can realize that reality is actually acting upon us. The Dharma, 10,000 Dharmas, is flowing through our veins. And it is expressing itself through the blinking of the eyes, through our walking, through our sitting, through our thinking too. In other words, life is moving through the self rather than the self moving through life. And this is what Dogen is pointing at the second part of this line, by saying, all things coming and carrying out practice enlightenment through the self is realization. Not that it leads to realization. It is realization. Just a recognition that I want something. I want what I don't have. But that creates the gap. That is, I am using the practice for something. But to flip it on its head. And then I am here because of that which I am searching. If it wasn't for that, it won't be here either. So we do not act upon life. As he says, life is acting upon us. And it is, by doing so, constantly verifying the original self. It is constantly verifying what we are searching. So how do we inquire about such a Dharma, such a teaching? Where do you obtain it? So the monk in this koan is asking Nansen, if there is any Dharma that has never been preached to the people. Nansen says, yes, there is. There is. The more important question is, how will you hear the Dharma that has not been preached to the people? When all things are merged, that which is being preached and that which is listening are inseparable. So this monk, like many of us, may have been exposed to multiple teishos, talks, read many sutras, commentaries, books, and was looking for more input. I got a bunch of stuff in my head already. I thought it will deliver. It didn't deliver yet. What else is there? What more is there? What more can you give me? And if you can't give me anything else, maybe I'll go somewhere else. Maybe someone else or something else will do it. So he was still experiencing a sense of lack. Because deep down, we are convinced that the satisfaction or completion will come from the outside. And we become slaves to searching for it. Another talk, another book, another lecture, another something. And it actually takes many years of dedicated practice to get to a point of being willing to let go of that expectation. How else can we realize the true meaning of inherent Buddhahood? How can we reconcile that inherent Buddhahood, right? Buddhism 101. How do we reconcile that with, yeah, but I'm searching something outside of that? So our entire practice is based on one thing. Sit down, shut up, and take a look at that which is sitting down. That's it. That's it. That's what it comes down to. Stop talking. Stop moving about. Turn the attention inwardly and explore there rather than out. Nansen, also known as Nanchuan, was 9th century Chinese Zen master, a disciple of the great master Mao, Matsu, and the teacher of Zhaozhu, Zhoshu, as many of you have heard about different times. During one of his talks, Nansen referred to the Dharma that has not yet been preached to the people and said, "All Buddhas of the three times don't know it. But cats and cows know it. Cats and cows know it." And we have deer that come up to the backyard and graze almost every morning. We're fortunate enough to have the opportunity to begin the day by observing a being that is fully merged with reality. They are totally devoted to chewing the grass or whatever it is they're chewing. Sometimes our flowers. But their eyes, the ears, right? Eyes, ears are moving in different directions to detect any danger. They appear to be very skittish to us. So if we open the door, they take off immediately. So they obviously experience fear. But it's interesting to see how they transform the fear into quick and agile action, which dissipates the emotional buildup, and they can easily return to chewing the grass in the area they perceive as safer. They don't create a story out of their experience. They don't identify themselves as the entity that is running away from something. All things coming and carrying out the being we call deer. They're not doing it. There's no decision. There's no calculation. There is, but it's not the way we see it. It is continuous. It happens rather than they make it happen. They are totally in deep state of trust. Now we're different. We act, we're the same, but we are acting very differently. We may categorize deer as fearful animals, but in reality, they are born, they live, and they die in full harmony with the great unknown, that which we are trying to know. They are the Dharma that has never been preached to the people. How can they be reduced to an emotion or to our own perception? In the case of a deer, running away, eating grass, mating, are the ways they actualize the fundamental point. So simple. Simple for them, complicated for us. That's why we stop on a daily basis, stop moving around. We fold our legs. We turn the attention inwardly. So we too can discover what most other creatures don't have to worry about. In Fukan Zazengi, basic instructions for Zazen, Dogen wrote, the way is basically perfect and all-pervading. The way is basically perfect and all-pervading. How could it be contingent upon practice and realization? How can it be contingent upon acquiring? The Dharma vehicle is free and untrammeled. What need is there for concentrated effort? Indeed, the whole body is far beyond the world's dust. Who could believe in means to brush it clean? It is never apart from one, right where one is. What is the use of going off here and there to practice? That was Dogen's original question that led him to travel from Japan to China to inquire further about the practice, which is a logical question, right? It makes sense to ask the question, if I'm already a Buddha, why bother practicing? Why do anything? And then he says, and yet, so yes, you are already a Buddha, and yet, if there is the slightest discrepancy, the way is as distant as heaven from earth. If the least like or dislike arises in the mind, you're lost in confusion. This is what we want to encounter, get in touch with. Not finding purity, but examining at our own desecration. Purity is fine. How do we desecrate? The Dharma vehicle, he says, is free and untrammeled. Tremble, as you know, as you may know, is a tool that attaches to a work table or a board, and it restricts a tool such as a jigsaw, a router, or a pencil to a set diameter. So you can make an even circle, like drawing a circle with a compass. So to say that the Dharma is untrammeled means that it is free of any designations, any interpretation, conceptual formations, and therefore it cannot be defined. It cannot be defined, it cannot be sought, it cannot be understood, it cannot be given from another, taken from another. It's nonsense said to the monk. It is neither mind nor Buddha, nor a being. Nansen once said to the assembled monks, why is it that phenomenal existence is empty? If there is nothing within mind, then how does one explain how the myriad things arise? Isn't it as if shadowy forms differentiate emptiness? This question is like someone grasping sound and placing it in a box, or blowing into a net to fill it with air. Therefore, some old worthy said, it's not mind, it's not Buddha, it's not a thing. Thus, we just teach you to go on a journey. Just go on a journey. Make the journey the search, the quest. We divide it as where I am, where I want to be, what I understand, what I don't understand. Can this be one, is the question. Can we be at ease and at the same time inquire? At the same time be curious? Not, I will be restless until I find, which of course is very common. But does it work? We have to inquire about that too. But if you sit for a little bit, not much, at some point you realize, I'm getting nowhere with this, which is good. Right? You get nowhere with this. Then you turn it around and you go deeper. And you ask about the nature of inquiry. In other words, inquire about inquiry itself rather than use it as means to an end, as something that will make you become someone that you're not. It's an incredible way to find our way to true, real creativity. Creativity just for the sake of expressing, not for the sake of, look at me, I did this. What do you think about that? Isn't that good? Am I not talented? In fact, we're not talented. It is talented. We're nothing. By being nothing, we can allow all that to come and carry us, carry the talent through us, carry the uniqueness of our being. Guide us. He says, thus we just teach you to go on a journey. Which is true, right? So when you first enter a practice center, you get basic instructions in Zazen. Maybe a cup of tea. That's it. And then you're pointed to a cushion, a bench, a chair. That's it. Go on a journey. When people ask, is there any further instruction throughout when I sit? We say no. No, we don't say anything. We're not going to bother you while you are on the journey. We're going to allow you to explore. So we go on the journey because it cannot be defined. It cannot be defined, but it can be verified by experience through the journey. Your Zazen, our Zazen practice, direct link. And then post-Zazen practice, a further embodiment and actualization of it. So back to the Fukan Zazengi, he continues by saying, you should therefore, because of the slightest discrepancy, right? You should therefore cease from practice based on intellectual understanding, pursuing words and following after speech, which is exactly what this monk is doing. Well, it's exactly what this monk is mirroring to us because this is what we're doing. It's not somebody from the past. It's the one here sitting on this cushion. Right? Always is when it comes to koans. So refrain, cease from practice based on intellectual understanding, pursuing words and following after speech, and learn the backward step that turns your light inwardly to illuminate yourself. Body and mind of themselves will drop away. And your original face will be manifest. They will, by themselves, they will drop away because they're unsubstantiated. Because they're not there to begin with as something fixed or a barrier. They're only a barrier when we claim that it is a barrier. When we feed it, when we make it a barrier, it is. But when you turn inwardly and you're not involved in sustaining you and your story through creating barriers, they naturally drop away. And then he says, if you want to attain suchness, you should practice suchness without delay. Practice this. What is this? That may be a good question, maybe not, depending on what we do after we ask the question. What is it is a wonderful question. But just that, just ask the question. Don't look for answers. Just ask. Then he says, for Zazen, a quiet room is suitable. Eat and drink moderately. Those are good. It's good for us to recognize, to understand what is helpful and what may create complications for us, right? So a quiet room is suitable for that. Also, don't eat too much. Don't drink too much. Right? Don't make yourself drowsy. Cast aside all involvements and seize all affairs. Do not think good or bad. Do not administer pros and cons. Very challenging for us. We have to admit, this is challenging. Because it's not that we think good or bad in such a way of, I'm going to not think good or bad. It just happens. We just get caught up in that. Seize all the movements of the conscious mind, the gauging of all thoughts and views. Have no designs of becoming a Buddha. Let go of wanting to be anything else. And for that, we have to stop judging the way we are. Because obviously if I'm involved in judging the way I am or my circumstances, I would like to become something else. I would like to arrive at different circumstances because I don't like it. But what he's saying is put aside that. Because as long as you don't put it aside, well, that's what you're going to experience. Lack. Wanting to become something else. Then he says, sitting itself is the practice of the Buddha. Sitting itself is non-doing. It is nothing but the true form of the self. Apart from sitting, there is nothing to seek as the Buddha Dharma. Apart of sitting, there is no other enlightenment. So by taking full responsibility to quietly observe our thoughts, our habits, our impulsive reactivities, the process of our mental formations, how we create, and the underlying workings of the conceptual-based self, aka ego. We expose two vital revelations. We realize our fluid intrinsic nature, and we recognize the mental formations that cover it and create the illusion of a fixed self. In his writings about the process of awakening, Chogyam Trungpa says, according to the Buddhist tradition, the spiritual path is the process of cutting through our confusion or uncovering the awakened state of mind. When the awakened state of mind is crowded by the ego and its attendant paranoia, it takes on the character of an underlying instinct. So it's not a matter of building up the awakened state of mind, but rather of burning out the confusions that obstruct it. In the process of burning out these confusions, we discover enlightenment. We don't attain it, we discover it. If the process were otherwise, the awakened state of mind would be a product dependent upon cause and effect, and therefore liable to dissolution. Anything that is created, anything that is created or attained, right, must sooner or later die. If enlightenment were created in such a way, there would always be the possibility of ego's reasserting itself, causing a return to the confused state. Enlightenment is permanent because we have not produced it. We have merely discovered it. In the Buddhist tradition, the analogy of the sun appearing from behind the clouds is often used to explain the discovery of enlightenment. In meditation practice, we clear away the confusion of ego in order to glimpse the awakened state, the absence of ignorance, of being crowded in, of paranoia, opens up a tremendous view of life. One discovers a different way of being. One discovers what one is. That we can do. We cannot attain what we're not. Well, we can create and sustain what we're not. As we often say, we put a head on a head. That head is a lot of work to protect. Newman's commentary said about that, Nansen was merely asked a question and he exhausted all of his possessions at once and was reduced to nothing. There's a lot in that, right? There's a lot in saying it is not. Whatever the mind produces, whatever the mind creates as a prized possession, whether it has it now or it wants to have it later, that is conceptualized. That becomes a thing. So the it is not has to work directly on that. Whatever we think we are, whatever we think we're not, both. We have to look at both as it is not so. And that's what Nansen is offering here. The verse says, too much talk degrades virtue. One letter degrades virtue. Because potentially one letter can get us caught up. And caught up in a thought that says, this is not it, you're not it. You will find it somewhere else. Someone will give it to you. Someone has it other than you. Silence is certainly effective. Practice it, right? It doesn't mean that there are no times that words are needed. Of course. But how do we use words? It's the same as how do we search without searching? How do we use words without using words? How do we use words for the sake of the moment, not for the sake of the self? We all know how vested we are in what we say. How vested we are in wanting others to agree with what we say, or at least to not disagree. How vested we are in hearing our own voice. So silence is certainly effective. And then it says, even if the great ocean should change, it can never be communicated to you. It can never be communicated. So what do we do with that? Is it discouraging? I think it's quite the opposite. I think it's life-giving. Zen Master Zhefeng once said to the congregation, so majestic, so subtle. So majestic, so subtle. Jingqing came forward and said, what is it that's so majestic and subtle? Zhefeng said, what? What? Jingqing retreated and stood there. Zhefeng said, this matter is in this, what we, this way we esteem, in this way subtle. This matter, in this way we esteem, it is subtle. Jingqing said, in the years since I came here, I have never heard the master give instruction in this manner. Zhefeng said, although I have not done so, what is now revealed has never been lacking. Is there any difficulty? Jingqing said, none at all. This is what the master has not taught, but what has always been present. And Zhefeng said, and what makes me speak thus? From this, Jingqing found an entrance and moreover gained prominence in the congregation. Something shifted. What makes me speak thus? I'll end with Kyogen's verse after his realization. The sound of something struck, and I've forgotten all I knew. Training was not even temporarily necessary. In movement and deportment, I manifest the ancient way and fall not into possible pessimism. Nothing of me remains behind when I pass. In speech and manner free of dignity, all those who have reached this state of knowledge by experience, without exception, tell of the supreme activity potential. All those who have reached this state of knowledge by experience, all of them, without exception, tell of the supreme activity potential. How do we get out of our own way? Not search, but examine how we desecrate. Thank you.